He grinned with embarrassment. All right. I am being a fool. The drink has fuddled my mind. Come back, I beg you. Give me the message from Lostries. With a show of reluctance, I climbed back up the ladder, and he followed me into the hut, staggering only a little. My mistress bids me tell you that her love for you is untouched by any of the things that have been thrust upon her. She is still and will always be your woman. By Horace, she puts me to shame, he muttered. No, I disagreed. Your shame is of your own making. He snatched his sword from the scabbard that hung above the filthy bed and slashed out at the row of wine amphora that stood against the far wall. As each one burst, the wine poured out and trickled through the slats of the floor. He was panting as he came back to me, and I scoffed at him. Look at you. You have let yourself go until you are soft and as short of wind as an old priest. Enough of that, Taita. You have had your say. Mock me no more, or you will regret it. I could see he was becoming as angry as I had intended. My insults were stiffening him up nicely. My mistress would have you take up the challenge thrown to you by Pharaoh so that you will still be alive and a man of honour and worth in 5 years' time when she is free to come to you. I had his full attention now. 5 years? What is this about, Taita? Will there truly be a term to our suffering? I worked the mazes for Pharaoh. He will be dead in 5 years from now, I told him simply. He stared at me in awe, and I saw 100 different emotions pursue each other across his features. He is as easy to read as the scroll on which I write. The mazes, he whispered at last. Once long ago he had been a doubter, and had disparaged my way with the mazes. That had changed, and he was now an even firmer believer in my powers than my mistress. He had seen my visions become reality too often to be otherwise. "Can you wait that long for your love?" I asked. "My mistress swears that she can wait for you through all eternity. Can you wait a few short years for her?" "She has promised to wait for me?" he demanded. "Through all eternity," I repeated, and I thought he might begin to weep. I could not have faced that, not watched a man like Thanos in tears, so I went on hastily. "Do you want to hear the vision that the mazes gave me?" He thrust back the tears. "Yes, yes," he agreed eagerly, and so we began to talk. We talked until the night fell, and then we sat in the darkness and talked some more. I told him the things that I had told my Lady Lostries, all the details that I had kept from them both over the years. When I came to the details of how his father Pianchi, Lord Harab, had been ruined and destroyed by his secret enemy, Thanos' anger was so fierce that it burned away the last effects of the debauchery from his mind, and by the time the dawn broke over the swamps, his resolve was once more clear and strong. "Let us get on with this enterprise of yours, for it seems the right and proper way." He sprang to his feet and girded on his sword scabbard. Although I thought it wise to rest a while, and let him recover fully from the effects of the wine, he would have no part of it. "Back to Karnak at once," he insisted. "Kratos is waiting, and the lust to avenge my father's memory and to lay eyes on my own sweet love again burns like a fire in my blood." Once we had left the swamp, Thanos took the lead along the rocky path, and I followed him at a run. As soon as the sun came up above the horizon, the sweat burst out across his back and streamed down to soak the waistband of his kilt. It was as though the rancid old wine was being purged from his body. Although I could hear him panting wildly, he never paused to rest or even moderate his pace, but ran on into the rising heat from the desert without a check. It was I who pulled him up with a shout, and we stood shoulder to shoulder and stared ahead. The birds had caught my attention. I had picked out the commotion of their wings from afar. "Vultures," Thanos grunted with ragged breath. "They have something dead amongst the rocks." He drew his sword and we went forward cautiously. We found the man first, and chased the vultures off him in a flurrying storm of wings. I recognized him by the shock of blonde hair as the husband I had met on the road the previous day. There was nothing left of his face, for he had lain upon his back, and the birds had eaten the flesh away to the bones of the skull. They had picked out his eyes, and the empty sockets stared at the cloudless sky. His lips were gone, and he grinned with bloody teeth, as though at the futile joke of our brief existence upon this earth. Thanos rolled him on his stomach, and we saw at once the stab wounds in his back that had killed him. There were a dozen of these thrust through his ribs. "Whoever did this was making sure of the job," Thanos remarked, hardened to death as only a seasoned soldier can be. I walked on into the rocks, and a buzzing black cloud of flies rose from the dead body of the wife. I have never understood where the flies come from, how they materialize so swiftly out of the searing dry heat of the desert. I guessed that the wife had aborted while they were busy with her. They must have left her alive after they had taken their pleasure with her. With the last of her strength, she had taken the infant protectively in her arms. She had died like that, huddled against a boulder, shielding her stillborn infant from the vultures. I went on deeper into the broken ground, and once again the flies led me to where the bandits had dragged the little girl. At least one of them had summoned up the compassion to cut her throat after they had finished with her, rather than let her bleed slowly to death. One of the flies settled on my lips. I brushed it away and began to weep. Thanos found me still weeping. "Did you know them?" he asked, and I nodded and cleared my throat to answer.
"Yes, I met them on the road yesterday. I tried to warn them."
I broke off, for it was not easy to continue. I took a deep breath.
"They had a donkey. The Shrikes will have taken it."
Thanos nodded. His expression was bleak as he turned away and made a rapid cast amongst the rocks.
"This way," he called, and broke into a run, heading out into the rocky desert.
"Thanos," I yelled after him, "Kratos is waiting." But he took not the least notice, and I was left with no option but to follow him. I caught up with him again when he lost the tracks of the donkey on a bad piece of ground and was forced to cast ahead. "I feel for that family even more than you do," I insisted, "but this is folly. Kratos waits for us. We do not have time to waste." He cut me off without even glancing in my direction. "How old was that child? Not more than 9 years? I always have time to see justice done." His face was cold and vengeful. It was clear to see that he had recovered all his former mettle. I knew better than to argue further. The image of the little girl was still strong and clear in my mind. I joined him, and we picked up the trail again. Now, with the two of us cooperating, we went forward even more swiftly. Thanos and I had tracked gazelle and oryx, and even lion, in this fashion, and we had both become adept at this esoteric art. We worked as a team, running on each side of the spurs that our quarry had left, and signalling every twist or change in it to each other. Very soon our quarry reached a rough track that led eastwards from the river and still deeper into the desert. They had joined it and made our task of catching up with them much simpler. It was almost noon, and our water bottles were empty when at last we spotted them far ahead. There were five of them, and the donkey. It was clear that they had not expected to be followed deep into the desert, which was their fastness, and they were moving carelessly. They had not even taken the trouble to cover their back trail. Thanos pulled me down behind the shelter of a rock while we caught our breath, and he growled at me, "We'll circle out ahead of them. I want to see their faces." He jumped up and led me in a wide detour out to one side of the track. We overtook the band of Shrikes, but well beyond their line of sight. Then we cut in again to meet the track ahead of them. Thanos had a soldier's eye for ground and set up the ambuscade unerringly. We heard them coming from afar, the clatter of the donkey's hooves and the sing-song of their voices. While we waited for them, I had the first opportunity to contemplate the prudence of my decision to follow along so unquestioningly. When the party of Shrikes at last came into view, I was convinced that I had been over-hasty. They were as murderous-looking a bunch of ruffians as I had ever laid eyes upon, and I was armed only with my little jeweled dagger. Just short of where we lay, the tall, bearded Bedouin, who was obviously their leader, stopped suddenly and ordered one of the men who followed him to unload the water skin from the donkey. He drank first, and then passed it on to the others. My throat closed in sympathy as I watched them swallow down the precious stuff. "By Horus, look at the stains of the women's blood on their robes. I wish I had Lenata with me now," Thanos whispered, as we crouched amongst the rocks. "I could put an arrow through that one's belly and drain the water from him like beer from a vat." Then he laid a hand on my arm. "Don't move until I do, do you hear me? I want no heroics from you now, mind." I nodded vigorously and felt not the slightest inclination to protest against these very reasonable instructions. The Shrikes came on again, directly to where we waited.
They were all heavily armed. The Bedouin walked ahead. His sword was strapped between his shoulder blades, but with the handle protruding up over his left shoulder, ready to hand. He had the cowl of his wooden cloak drawn over his head to protect him from the fierce sunlight. It impaired his side vision, and he did not notice us as he passed close in front of us. Two others followed him closely, one of them leading the donkey. The last, who sauntered along behind the animal, engrossed in a listless squabble over a piece of gold jewellery that they had taken from the murdered woman. All their weapons were sheathed, except for the short bronze-headed stabbing spears carried by the last pair. Thanos let them all pass, and then he stood up quietly and moved in behind the last two men in the column. He appeared to move casually, as the leopard does, but it was in reality only a breath before he swung his sword at the neck of the man on the right. Although I had intended backing Thanos up to the full, somehow my good intentions had not been translated into action, and I still crouched behind my comforting rock. I justified myself with the thought that I would probably only have hindered him if I had followed him too closely. I had never watched Thanos kill a man before, although I knew that it was his vocation and that he had over the years had every opportunity to hone these gruesome skills, still I was astonished by his virtuosity. As he struck, his victim's head leapt from its shoulders like a desert spring hare from its burrow, and the decapitated trunk actually took another step before the legs buckled under it. As the blow reached the limit of its arc, Thanos smoothly reversed the stroke. With the same movement, he struck backhanded at the next brigand. The second neck severed just as cleanly. The head toppled off and fell free, while the carcass slumped forward, with the blood fountaining high in the air. The splash of blood and the weighty thump-thump of the two disembodied heads striking the rocky earth alerted the other three shrikes. They spun about in alarm and for a moment stared in bewildered disbelief at the sudden carnage in their ranks. Then, with a wild shout, they drew their swords and rushed at Thanos in a body. Rather than retreating before them, Thanos charged them ferociously, splitting them apart. He swung to face the man who had isolated from his mates, and his thrust ripped a bloody flesh wound down the side of his chest. The man squealed and reeled backwards. But before Thanos was able to finish him off, the other two fell upon him from behind. Thanos was forced to spin round to face them, and bronze clashed on bronze as he stopped their charge. He held them off at sword's length, engaging first one and then the other, until the lightly wounded man recovered and came at him from his rear. "Behind you!" I yelled at him, and he whipped round only just in time to catch the thrust on his own blade. Instantly the other two were upon him again, and he was forced to give ground in order to defend him from all sides. His swordsmanship was breathtaking to watch. So swift was his blade that it seemed that he had erected a glittering wall of bronze around himself, against which the blows of his enemies clattered ineffectually. And then I realized that Thanos was tiring. The sweat streamed from his body in the heat, and his features were contorted with the effort. The long weeks of wine and debauchery had taken their toll of what had once been his limitless strength and stamina. He fell back before the next rush with which the bearded Bedouin drove at him, until he pressed his back to one of the boulders on the opposite side of the track from where I still crouched helplessly. With the rock to cover his back, all three of his attackers were forced to come at him from the front. But this was no real respite. Their attack was relentless. Led by the Bedouin, they howled like a pack of wild dogs as they bayed him, and Thanos' right arm tired and moved slower. The spear carried by the first man whom Thanos had beheaded had fallen in the middle of the track. I realized that I must do something immediately if I were not to watch Thanos hack down before my eyes. With a huge effort, I gathered up my slippery courage and crept from my hiding place. The shrikes had forgotten all about me and their eagerness for the kill. I reached the spot where the spear lay without any one of them noticing me, and I snatched it up. With the solid weight of the weapon in my hands, all my lost courage came flooding back. The Bedouin was the most dangerous of the three of Thanos' adversaries, and he was also the closest to me. His back was toward me, and his whole attention was on the unequal duel. I leveled the spear and rushed at him. The kidneys are the most vulnerable target in the human back. With my knowledge of anatomy, I could aim my thrust exactly. The spear point went in at finger's width to one side of the spinal column, all the way in. The broad spearhead opened a gaping wound and skewered his right kidney with a surgeon's precision. The Bedouin stiffened and froze like a temple statue, instantly paralysed by my thrust. Then, as I viciously twisted the blade in his flesh the way Thanos had taught me, mincing his kidney to pulp, the sword fell from his fist and he collapsed with such a dreadful cry that his comrades were distracted enough to give Thanos his chance. Thanos' next thrust took one of them in the centre of his chest, and despite his exhaustion, it still had sufficient power to fly cleanly through the man's torso and for the blood-smeared point to protrude a hand span from between his shoulder blades. Before Thanos was able to clear his blade from the clinging embrace of live flesh and to kill the last shrike, the survivor spun around and ran. Thanos took a few paces after him, then gasped. "Oh, I'm all done in. After him, Taita. Don't let that murderous jackal get away."